Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata, Text 28. So this is a short Sanskrit prose text. It's not a verse, you know, so you don't chant it broken into lines. It just reads like a sentence. Anyasyam api jayayam trayaha. Just wait to the whole thing. Anyasyam api jayayam traya putra san uttama tamasa raivata iti manvantara adipatayaha. So, anybody want to try to read it? Very good. You are now a Sanskrit prose text reader. Okay. Anyone else want to try?
Anyasyam api jayayam traya putra asam uttamas tamaso raivata iti matvantara vipataya.
Okay. Anyasyam other api also jayayam. And the wife. Trayaha. Three. Putraha. Sons. Asam. There were. Uttama tamasa raivata. Uttama tamasa and raivata. Iti. Thus. Manu antara. Of the Manvantara millennium. Adipatayaha. Rulers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat. In the other wife, Maharaj Priyavrata begot three sons named Uttama, Tamasa, and Raivata. All of them later took charge of Manvantara millenniums. Purport. In every day of Brahma, there are 14 Manvantars. The duration of one Manvantar, the lifespan of one Manu, is 71 yugas, and each yuga is 4,320,000 years. Almost all the Manus selected to rule the Manvantaras came from the family of Maharaj Priyavrata. Three of them are particularly mentioned herein, namely Uttama, Tamasa, and Raivata. So, Om Jnana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So people are generally interested in, you know, the history, you know, of their country, And they want to know who was the first president, who was the second president, who was this president, that president. Or, if they live in some country where there's a king, they want to know who was the first king of this dynasty and the second king of that dynasty, and so on and so forth. So people want to know, something about the history of their rulers. So what they don't understand is that there are histories that deal with more than just what's gone on in the different countries on this planet. Even on this planet, they don't really have any real idea of the complete history. They think, each country has its different history, but if we go back to the time of the great Rajarshis on this planet, we understand there were rulers who were ruling over the whole planet, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, for example. So you could also speak of, who was, what were the different rulers of the whole planet? But even beyond that, there's the universe. These Manus were rulers of the whole universe, not just, the population of this planet. So there's also a history of the different Manus, and we're getting this history here. Vedic time is cyclical. It goes in cycles. The basic unit of the cycle is called the Kalpa, or the day of Brahma. It lasts for 4,320,000,000 years. It's followed by a night of Brahma that also lasts 4,320,000,000 years. During the days of Brahma, life is manifest in the universe. And during the nights of Brahma, life, including human life, is not manifest in the universe. So these days and nights of Brahma follow each other in succession. But each kalpa, as we learn here, is divided into 14 manvantar periods, each lasting about 300 million years, and different personalities are appointed to take up the post of Manu in each manvantara period. So, you can just imagine, maybe some of you were appointed to be temple presidents at different ISKCON centers for a few years, but you can just imagine being appointed Manu for 300 million years. You take the job, sir. Yes. Yeah, 300 million years. It's a long time. So, in the current Kalpa, the day of Brahma that we're in now, the first Manu was Swayambhuva Manu, and then the second one was Swarochisa Manu. And then the Manus that we see mentioned here came. The third Manu was Uttama. The fourth Manu was Tamasa. And the fifth Manu was Raivata. Following Raivata, in the sixth Manvantara period, the Manu was Chakshusha Manvantara. And we're now in the seventh Manvantara period, the Vaivasvata Manvantara period, where the Manu is the son of the sun god, Vivasvan. So that's the larger history. And why are we learning about these things? It's basically the Srimad Bhagavatam wants us to understand we're not you know, alone in this universe. It's not that we were just dropped here and we can do anything we want, or that we just evolved here, as the Darwinists say, and that we could just figure it all out ourselves. The Manus are both the progenitors and the lawgivers for the human species. That means if we, you know, trace our ancestry back, we're not going to come to some ape or monkey. We're not going to find out that if we trace our ancestry back, we just evolved from chemicals and apes and monkeys and things like that. We're going to find that we come ultimately from some Prajapati. And ultimately, we can trace our ancestry back to Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa, and further back to Brahma. So we have some connection with these higher beings in terms of both our ancestry and how we should be living our lives. I mean, the Darwinists say, well, Krishna describes, the materialistic philosophy in the 16th chapter of the Gita. He says, asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahura nishvaram aparasparasam bhutam kimanyat kamahaitikam. There's no God, there's no soul, matter is the only thing that exists. It somehow or other it combines to produce living things, but there's no purpose to this world. There's no God in control or higher beings in control. We can do whatever we like. If we want to imagine there's some God and invent some commandments, well, we can do that too if we like it. But it's more reasonable just to think like, well, let's just figure it out. Let's do what we want. We're here somehow or other. But no, it's not like that. There is a God in control of the universe. There are laws of nature that have to be followed. There are commandments that have to be followed. And the Manus are the ones who give these different laws of how human society should be organized according to Varna and Ashrama, and that there are certain principles of religion and the mode of goodness, ignorance, and passion, and beyond that there's transcendental religion. So there are rules and regulations. And here in the Srimad Bhagavatam we're learning the transcendental rules, the rules and principles that will bring us out of the material world back to the spiritual world. Because ultimately, we're not these bodies. Bodies are just vehicles for conscious selves, for souls. Originally, we belong on the spiritual level of existence. And we're meant to return there. And the transcendental rules of religion help us do that. Of course, there are other kinds of religion, too. There's religion in the modes of nature. But if you follow religion in the modes of nature, you keep returning, perhaps to be born on this earth again, or maybe even to go up to one of the planets of the demigods, to exist on the demigod level. But shine punye martya lokam vishante. As soon as your karma runs out, then it's back to martya loka, the planet of death, which is this earth planet. And sometimes people have this experience. They're traveling on vacation in some foreign country, and then they give their credit card, and the hotel manager says, "Well, sorry, your credit card isn't running. It's expired, or you're past your limit, or whatever." And then you're in big trouble. You have to go home. So, in the same way, by following the materialistic rules of religion, we may rise to some higher position on this planet or to some higher position on some heavenly planet. But still it's the material world. Still we have to face birth, death, old age, disease. But the transcendental principles of religion which the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us, will take us out of the cycle of birth and death so we can enter into Krishna's Nitya Leela. Bhaktiyam mam abhijananti yavan yas chasmi tatvataha tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantaram. If we practice the transcendental spiritual principles of bhakti yoga, we will come to know Krishna totally, in truth, factually. And when we reach that stage, then we're qualified to enter into Krishna's spiritual abode, vishate tadanantaram, enter into his eternal lila. And this is the actual goal. So it's not that Srimad Bhagavatam is giving this information just like some ordinary history book. It's the reason Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us this information is to let us know there is higher control, that we are under the influence of certain laws. And if we obey these laws, then we'll make some advancement. If we don't, then we'll find ourselves in big trouble. So that is the purpose behind these histories. Recently, some devotees have asked me to say a few words about my recent trip to Denmark. So I was there a couple weeks ago, for about a week, and it happened when I was there. It was Darwin's birthday, February 12th. So we may wonder where Darwin is now, where he went. After he left his body, I sort of suspect maybe he was that monkey that ripped the face off that lady, and I don't know, but I think he was so much focused on apes and monkeys and things like that he's probably, I don't know for sure, but it seems like probable that he may be in some monkey or ape body somewhere now, trying to work his way back up to the human species. That's real evolution. It's not an evolution of bodies, Krishna says. But the soul may evolve through the different types of bodies till it gets to the human form. And the human form of life, if we use it properly, we can return to the spiritual world. If we don't use it properly, then and we use it to mislead ourselves and mislead others, as Darwin did, then our destination isn't very good. So Srila Prabhupada asked that his disciples challenge the theory of evolution, because it's misleading people as to the actual purpose of human life. So, following that order of Srila Prabhupada, I have been trying to do that. This one book I wrote with Sataputra Prabhu, who was also following these orders of Srila Prabhupada, it's called Forbidden Archaeology. And a devotee in Denmark translated it and published it there, the abridged version of it. So he invited me to come and give some lectures during the Darwin's birthday week. And I went and did that. I gave some lectures in Copenhagen, which is the capital of Denmark, and also some lectures in a city called Aarhus, which is the second biggest city in Denmark. So I gave two lectures at the university there, and they were very well-attended lectures. Lots of students came, but some of the professors at the university, they were very angry that the university allowed me to speak there. I call these kinds of professors fundamentalist Darwinist. They really don't seem to believe in freedom of thought, exchange of ideas. They think this university is our place, and we don't want any opposition to Darwin in our university. But still, the university allowed me to speak. And the biggest newspaper in the city of Aarhus, they found out about this, that I was speaking there, that some of the professors were opposing it. And they sent a reporter and a photographer to interview me and take pictures. And they really liked what I had to say. They thought, well, this is really great, yes, there should be freedom of thought. There should be alternatives to Darwinism in the education system. Why should it be some kind of intellectual dictatorship in the schools, where only the Darwin idea gets taught? So they published a big article in their newspaper. It's got a big picture of me, and there's a big headline saying, "Is this man dangerous?" And yes, I am dangerous. I'm dangerous to those who think that this Darwin theory is the best theory. So it was, it's very interesting. As I said, lots of students came to the lectures. They asked nice questions. They bought books. They bought copies of the Danish edition of Forbidden Archaeology. And then I went to Copenhagen, and I gave some public lectures there, again, that were very, very well attended. But at one of them, there was an archaeologist from the University of Copenhagen. So basically what I was presenting is archaeological evidence that shows human beings have been present on Earth for millions and millions and millions of years. That's what we're learning here in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is describing events that took place hundreds of millions of years ago on Earth and other parts of the universe, and human beings were there. So today, the scientists, they want to say, the Darwinist scientists, they want to say, no, human beings evolved from apes about 100,000 years ago. Before that, there were no human beings. So all this Srimad Bhagavatam stuff that you're reading, that's just mythology. That's just imagination. Not true. So, of course, we can just accept the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam, because they're coming from a perfect source, Krishna, ultimately. And we can just leave it at that. Say, well, this is true because it's coming from God, ultimately, and God has perfect knowledge. But some people, they need a little bit more than that. They want to know, are there any archaeological facts that humans have existed millions of years ago? So there are some. So, we give them in our book, Forbidden Archaeology, and for some people, it helps increase their faith in the Vedic literature. I mean, best that you just have faith in the Vedic literature because it is what it is, the Vedic literature, the absolute truth. But sometimes some people need a little bit of encouragement and help, some scientific facts that kind of back these things up. So Srila Prabhupada also wanted us to do that kind of preaching, so I was doing it. So there were some archaeologists there, and he was trying to criticize some of the archaeological evidence I was talking about. Because, sometimes scientists find human bones and artifacts in very, very ancient layers of rock, very deep down in the earth. So he's saying, but it's possible it could have slipped down from some higher level. It's possible, that this could have happened or that could have happened. And I told them, well, anything is possible. But if you're going to be a scientist, if you want to say, oh, there was a hole through which the human bones slip down to some lower level, then you actually have to show that at that place, at that spot, there is such a hole. You know, you can't just talk about it's possible that this could have happened, it's possible that that could have happened. I told him, it's possible you're a Martian. It's possible you're a robot that was programmed to come in here and say these things by some skeptic society, you know. So pretty much it was the audience kind of just went, you know, like, he shut up, you know, at that point. So anyways, it's something Srila Prabhupada asked us to do, challenge the Darwinian theory of evolution. So he's trying to do that in Denmark. So any questions or comments about anything?
Hare Krishna, thank you for your presentation. This picture of Darwinism that you're painting, that we, I guess most of us here, subscribe to, is still obviously not the dominant viewpoint. We know that here in the United States there was a big court case between those who were proposing intelligent design as an alternative to be taught in the schools and the science teachers who opposed that. And they actually went to court, and in the court case, some scientists showed the judge that they had just recently found some missing link fossils that proved their point that, you know, Darwin, because if you believe Darwinism, then it's supposed to predict that in certain eras, certain strata, you should find certain fossils that kind of stick to the theory. In other words, these missing links between fish and the first land animals, et cetera, et cetera. And they just happened to find them just in time for that court case. And so the judge ruled against the intelligent design camp and kicked out that theory from the school, from being taught in that particular school system. So how do you respond to that? Because they claim they've shown that Darwinism actually works.
Well, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to, you know, challenge these kinds of claims. All they really do is just create the need for two more missing links. You know, they say, okay, you know, we found there's, you know, like fish that live in the water and animals that live on the land. So they claim to find, okay, here's something in the middle. All that does is create the need for more or less missing links. So they've just increased the amount of missing links that they have to find. And then another thing is that just because you can put things in a sequence doesn't tell you how the sequence arose. You know, for example, I can put on a table, a whole sequence of computers, from a little small one to a bigger one to the next bigger one to the next bigger one. But each of those computers is individually designed and manufactured. It's not that one computer came from another. You know, so just because you can arrange skeletons in some kind of sequence that goes from bigger to little, or, I mean, from smaller to bigger or something like that, doesn't mean that that sequence came about by evolution. It can come about because each form of life was individually created and designed and manifested by the Prajapatis, as we learn in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's kind of false argumentation, really. And one important fact to understand is that most people in the United States don't accept the Darwinian theory of evolution as it's taught, you know, by its supporters within the scientific world. Only about 10% of the people really accept it. Most people, perhaps because of the Christian creationist influence in this country. About 60% believe that God created human beings just as they are now in the beginning. So most people really don't accept the theory of evolution. And if it were totally up to the people, there would be alternatives to evolution taught in the education system. You know, about most people in the United States believe that alternatives like intelligent design and creationism, like we're Vedic creationists, that's what we are, should be taught in the education system. And it would be taught, except, you know, the scientists have influenced the federal judges so that whenever the people in some city or state or county decide, we're going to teach alternatives to evolution in the education system and let the students make up their own minds. You know, the evolutionists go to the federal courts, and then they have one man who will overrule the will of the majority of people who actually want, you know, these alternatives to be taught in the education system. So that's, yeah, the unfortunate situation we're in now. I think what we ultimately need, I mean, if that's the way the system's going to work, you need to have better judges, you know. So, yes.
Judy Karnofubo, I want to thank you for a wonderful class, and I wanted to say that I personally have really appreciated your books, having gone through the school system. I was, you know, indoctrinated with Darwinism and materialism, and your points have really helped me to increase my faith and to become much more faithful just in accepting Shastra as it is, as Prabhupada says, because I needed your assistance to actually remove these things, to delete these false notions that were so heavily pushed on us. And I wanted to make the point that it's not just that they have their theory and they have their proof. Actually, they're lying to us. They don't have a complete proof. They don't have all the evidence that gives us a complete picture of evolution. They have a lot of gaps in their theory, and they just want us to accept by the force of their yelling and their finance and all the backing and so on that they have, that, you know, sort of bully us into believing that their stories are true. Whereas we look at your book, Forbidden Archaeology, and it's full of all these cases that don't agree with Darwin's belief in this, you know, evolution of species from primordial soup. And you also highlight all the scientists who are credible scientists, intelligent scientists, capable scientists who discovered these things and were blacklisted and thrown out of the academy.
How much should I pay you to make this speech?
So, but this is what Srila Prabhupada was so transcendentally angry about, is these people were just, he called them the mundane wranglers. They were just rogues, thieves.
Yes, he definitely wanted his scientifically trained, educated devotees to challenge these ideas. Definitely, yeah. That's a fact.
Thank you.
Who is next?
Okay, I have a question and a comment. I think I'll start with a comment, which is the weakest part of Darwinian evolution is that if it's true, there should be a proliferation of transitional species, and they're not found. You just don't find. They're so excited about one missing link. Well, there should be dozens and dozens of them, hundreds of them actually, to get from a primitive species to a more advanced one. And they don't find. There's absolutely no evidence for transitional species. They're looking desperately for them. And yet there should be a proliferation of them, and there isn't. My question is, how old? You said that you found evidence of human skeletons that are old, but I mean, like, are prior to whatever they say the geological age before humans are. So how old, what geological age are these bones found?
There are cases in the book that go back hundreds of millions of years. You know, so that's... and actually, the beginning of the Kalpa, which is when the life forms are manifest. It was about 2 billion years ago. That's when our Kalpa, our day of Brahma, began. So there's evidence going back that far. That's interesting. It's kind of like an interesting coincidence, you could say, that according to mainstream science, they also believe life began, you know, about 2 billion years ago. That's the oldest fossil evidence that they have for single-celled organisms.
But you found actually human bones?
But yeah, there's human artifacts that go back that far, too. So, so they think it was just the most simple forms of life that were there in the beginning, whereas we would say there are more advanced forms of life as well from Shastra. Our main evidence is Shastra. That's our highest form of evidence. But there's also material evidence that's consistent with that, that says the same thing. Okay, I think it's time for class to end. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.